Session number 12709, Mr. Albert Davis, Reel 15.
Mr. Albert Davis, Reel 15. What are your outstanding memories of the fighting in France, Mr. Davis?
Well, it was closer fighting for a start. But I do know that on the way to Bayonne, Captain Kirby and one or two lads fired on a German car. They jumped out of it and ran away. And Captain Kirby captured it and claimed it as his own transport. And it wasn't very long before he got a flash painted on the wing and TT on it. And he used that all through the actions as his own personal car. The rest were small skirmishes, a bit here, a bit there, not concerning us sometimes, not concerning us. One or two that had been left behind, the rest had gone, you know, Germans. But they soon gave themselves up. They didn't seem altogether like the Nazis. They weren't too fanatical. They could see that there was too much strength against them. But after Bayonne Caen Road, which was heading for Tilly, and that was another rough place. Rough because it was a load of shelling. Shell day and night. You've got to be very, very careful where you walked and what you were doing, because we're always very close up, probably a field apart from the Germans all the time. And we've got to try and keep on their heels. But although we could see them, they could see us the same. And it's a matter of one who got the first shots in. A bit further on, I know I took out one of our knocked out tanks across a cornfield. I took out a Browning's machine gun out of this tank. I thought, well, we can use that. I mean, two machine guns are better than one. And I intended using it. In fact, I set it up in between Tilly and Hot. I set it up in the hedgerow. And just waited there. A patrol of Germans came along, of eight, along this edge, not 150 yards away. And they were doing the things that we were told not to group together chatting when they were on patrol. You know, we were told to leave a gap in between each one and follow on. But these were all grouped together right in a gap. And I was about to fire on them, and our lieutenant says, "No, Davis, don't you fire," he says. I said, "I can get the lot with one burst. It doesn't matter," he says. The colonel says he doesn't want any firing. They don't know we're so close, and we want to surprise them. So that grieved me, because I know I could have got them. But anyway, lucky for the Germans, they walked away. And then one of the new recruits saw one and fired a single shot. Well, there, the element of surprise had gone. They knew then that we were there. So he might as well have let me have shot him in the first place. Anyway, left the machine gun there and set up in mortars and got out my old pea in the hedge, and right on my right across the next field, not 200 yards away, there's a farmhouse. Now I ranged onto this farmhouse, just an ordinary smoke bomb, so that I wouldn't give myself away too much. And luck happens, the first bomb was practically smack on. I said, that's it. Range, right. And then I walked up the hedge closer to get a better observation. And I lay there and waited and waited and waited. And eventually, it came at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And one by one, I could see these children, one by one, a wagon came in the yard, truck. Two Jerrys got out. I could see quite close, he's only looking across this field. Two Jerrys got out and pulled some containers out of the wagon. Evidently, he was dishing the dinner up. Hot dinner. Because exactly like us, they lined up, come out where from they, you couldn't see where they came from, but you could see them going up, lining up for the dinner, scooping out the dinner, smacking it in the Dixies, and then sauntering away to eat it. I thought, I'll let quite a few go first, 20 or 30 of them, I should think. There must have been a whole company there. Let them all go. I thought, well, they're sitting down eating, and now's my chance. They'd be thinking of anything but bombs. So I said, right, 5 rounds rapid fire, 4 mortars, that was 20 bombs. 5 rounds rapid fire, woof. And you couldn't see nothing. You couldn't see nothing for smoke after the first bomb landed. But I do know that the truck had gone, but it had gone, and it must have took a lot of wounded with it, because we had a patrol after and we went around. There were 16 dead, and there was lots of clothes lying there. This was the day after, night after. And lots of clothes there with blood on it, which were wounded like, and carried off in the first aid trucks. But I was pleased about that. I thought, well, at least I've got double the amount I could have got in that gap. But that would have been 8 more. That'd been 24, wouldn't it? You know, you felt like that. I thought, well, that's for killing. Prior to this happening, Sir Winston Field, who was sent to our company then, came to me. He says, Sergeant Davis, he says, I want you to go back to A Echelon and get some stores. He says, take one man with you. Find a truck and take one man with you. And I said, very good. At the same time, Sergeant Yanto Williams heard what he said. And he said, hey, Sarge, he says, I'll go in your place if you like, he says. Better stick in here. Because he thought it was a couple of days out of action. And Winston Field says, okay. He says, if it's all right with Sergeant Davis, you can go. He says, come along with me and you can get the truck. So he takes one man with him. And I said, are you sure? I said, okay, I'll stay here then. Yes. He sets off, and unfortunately for him, they had some long-range guns. And they put some down. When they got to A. Ashland, he was hit. He was killed. And so was his the other lad, killed. And his body is now in the graveyard at Jerusalem. Shuane. But that could have been me, you see. This is the way things work. But he volunteered, and that's one thing I never did. I never volunteered for anything. If I was detailed, I'd do it. But I would never volunteer. It never seemed to pay off somehow.
When you'd kill Germans, was this feeling of, though, this is revenge for a friend or friends being killed?
That's exactly what it was, yeah. This was, I knew he'd been killed then. And I thought, well, this is revenge. I was mad because before he went, I could have got these eight in the gap. I was mad because he'd stopped me firing there. And I thought, well, M16 that's killed there is revenge, no? Oh, not the least bit. Sorry, I done it. I'd do it again. You know, I'd do it double and treble at times because they would do the same thing to me, and I knew that.
We haven't talked about communications between units. Did you have a wireless, an efficient wireless situation?
We had a wireless, yes, but a lot of times you couldn't rely on them. There's so many on wireless, you lost the station a bit, and then it was all mumbo-jumbo. But we did have a field telephone. And if I had to go not too far in front, I preferred to take my field telephone and trail a wire, you know, along the hedge, and usually a signaller would come with me if I wanted him. Sometimes I'd go myself if he wasn't necessary going too far. I'd go myself and said, no, you stop here, I'll go myself and carry the only a little set, little field set, just turn handle, you know, hello. That was a better communication. And there was a risk of getting the wires cut with a shell, but really when you come to think about it, it's a small risk. And I don't think I ever had one cut. With Shelley.
Were there any other hot places where life was difficult for you?
Yeah, that same place, this side, hot. Colonel Green came to me and he said, he says, Davis, he says, I want you to take me on a patrol further forward. He says, me and my Batman. I want to see for myself what's in front, what sort of land it is. Which I had no option. So I led the way. I knew past where these Germans were. I'd seen them. Up two or three edge sides until we got to the top of the ground. And he had a good look around. And all the time he didn't say anything to me. Well, I was always in the lead. And he says, that's far enough. Had a good look around. He says, I've seen all I want to see. He says, come on, we'll go back now. Well, we came back. And a bit later on, he sent for me. He says, Sergeant Davis, he says, how would you like to take over platoon sergeant of the sniper section? I said, I wouldn't. He said, I think you're just the man for it. I said, no, if you don't mind, sir. I said, I'd rather stay where I am with all my friends, where I can do most good. And he says, thought a little bit. He says, very good. He says, if that's the way you want it, stay where you are. It was a very cushy job, I tell you. I would have been able to act on my own boss, roam where I like. Nobody ever checked on you. It was a cushy job. But I didn't want it. I wanted to be with the friends I'd always been with. And I could use the mortars as good as anybody. Well, the crews had to use a mortar, but I knew when they wanted. And I'd find out if they wanted it. They're half-hearted about it, right, rather than unsure, we'll stick a few bombs down, provided we got them. You know, when you're running short of bombs, you just ring up and say, well, need some more bombs. We were never short of ammunition, anyway.
The supply situation was good, was it?
Yes, yeah.
Is it just the same with food and so on, that was coming through okay?
Food? Yes, as far as we're concerned, food was good. Because having been a butcher, it paid off for me. Because when we come across a farm, if there's any little pigs or sheep, in fact, Captain Kirby always came to me and said, right, Davis, he said, I want you to kill a little pig for the sergeant's mess or the officer's mess. How about it? Right? If we had time and we were out of action, yes, that's what I'd do. I'd kill a pig, a sheep, or knock some cockerels off, get some eggs. And altogether, our section and the officers were pretty well fed. But it didn't always... We couldn't always find the time to do it. No. I might have killed a sheep and then had to chuck him in the carrier until wait a day or so before I could skin it and undress it.
Was there much looting or souvenir searching amongst the houses or even the Germans of prisoners dead?
Not as far as we're concerned, because we were always mostly in the country. It's the odd farmhouse we come across. There was one instance, though, which I had a camera. I come across a camera off these Germans, dead Germans. I picked it up off them. Now, this camera, I never even had time to look at it properly. I just put it in the carrier and thought, well, I'll have a look at my leisure time. And it must have been 30 or 40 miles further on. And I got this camera out. We had a bit of a rest. I got this camera out and looking it over. And a farmer, it was round a farmhouse, a farmer came to me and he says, that's my camera. Bug off with you. Excuse me, isn't your camera? I picked this up off a German towards the beach. He says, I'm telling you, that's my camera. And he says, where's your officer? I said, there he is over there. He says, we went to the officer. He says, that sergeant has got my camera. And he says, how did you get it, Sarge? I said, I tell you, I picked it up not many miles off the beach of a dead German. It was lying on the floor, like. And he says, are you sure? And I said, well, you tell me how he can identify his camera from any other camera. And he said, every mark on that camera, and he says, that's before I saw him. He says, at the bottom of the camera, there's a letter M scratched on it. The M, whether that was his name or not. And I looked, true enough, there was a letter M. And, you know, I don't know it from the day to this, how he could identify that without, he didn't see that letter M. But as soon as he saw it, he said, that's my camera. He said, yes, the Germans took it from me months and months ago. But it was his, he described the last detail. And it was his camera, so I had no option, but, well, I could have been obstropolous and said, well, he's not having it back. But I said, well, friendly like, okay, I'll probably get another anyway.
Was there any danger in souvenir hunting from the point of view of Germans booby trapping desirable items?
No, I can't remember. I can't remember any incidences like that. It probably was done. I've heard of it being done, but it hadn't occurred on our section anyway, on our platoon.
Was the fighting within the very close countryside that you're talking about, small fields, hedgerows, sunken roads, was that having a strain upon yourself and the rest of the men?
Definitely, because you may think, start walking around thinking, oh, it's so quiet. You know, before a battle, so quiet, you wouldn't credit it. Start walking around in the open and, you know, expose yourself more and more, and suddenly, ping, there's so many snipers there. Snipers were, there are more snipers than anything, I think. Now, a friend of mine, Sergeant Ingram, I'd been across this cornfield and back again in an attack. Well, we didn't see the snipers that were at the top of the trees, and they got proper wooden hideouts, and they were chained to the trees, some of them. And I came back from this cornfield behind this hedge, not much of a hedge, and Sergeant Ingram said to me, he said, hey Bert, he says, watch out, there's a lot of snipers around this area. I said, I know there is, I just come across that cornfield. And just as he said that, he went bing, and they scalped him across the head, and he just spun round, dropped on the deck. And I said, get up, you silly bugger, they haven't hit you yet. But they had hit him. He had scalped him all right. So he was whipped off to the first aid tent. But shortly after this, we went and got a tank, one of the tanks were lying back, said, right, we knew where they'd come from, that sniper. Can you see them trees across there? See the one, the tallest of them? Could you put two or three shells atop of that? And he said, oh, if you like. I said, because there's some couple of snipers up there. And this tank come up and blasted this tree. You know, the branches flew all over, and you could see the pieces of wood flying. And when we did get up to the, we made an attack later on across this cornfield. When we did get up to it, it had killed these two Germans and blown the top off the tree. But there's dozens. That was it's always seemed a mean trick somehow to wait until one was exposed. But you couldn't afford to expose yourself. Sometimes you had to do. If you did, do it quickly without giving them a chance. As long as you're moving target, it's difficult hit. Once you stand still, like both of us did behind the edge. That's when he was easy target.
Did you have a defensive role at night when you were, in effect,
digging in? Yeah.
What kind of situation was that?
Well, if there is more than one likely place where they would come through, like crossroads or lanes in the country, I would sight one mortar one place, another, so that not always on one target. But prepare and get ready for that target so that you knew if you fired, even in the dark, that the bombs were landing in the right place. And always try, if you've got time and sort of prepare the bombs and what's the word I'm looking for? Range on the thing itself to get, so that you know you're on the spot. Of course, mortars again aren't like a gun. You know, remember it's smooth bore action and wind resistance can upset them, blow them off course. But at that time it was nice, hot, sunny weather. So there wasn't much wind about.
What other memories have you of France?
It's difficult to bring them to mind. There was lots of little memories. But
once you broke out of this countryside and moved round towards the Falaise situation, what was your role in that?
Well, after Hot, it became that the Americans were moving on our right. Caen was a big place. A lot of people engaged in Caen. And they come to Mount Pincon. Now, Mount Pincon was a... It wasn't so much the opposition. It was where the opposition was sighted. You know, but eventually we got to the top of the hill and got there, all right. Down the other side, partly, and across some fields. Now, Brigadier Senior... I think he was Brigadier Senior. He came to our Colonel Green, because he sent for all the sergeants as we got there, just dug in nicely, ready for any counterattack. And said, well, the Brigadier has just told him that we're to move another 1,000 yards further forward. But I've told him there's no way that we're going to do that. So you can relax, lads. And the next morning, Brigadier was mad and he said there was nothing there, but he hadn't got far along the lane before he got fired on, wounded, and one of his lads with him got killed, and he had to lie up before he could get back to our lines. So there was something there, and our colonel was right in saying there wasn't. Then, from there on, it was Mount Pinko, I can't remember the name, let's see. The next place was on to Le Plessel and Condé-sur-Mer, I can't pronounce it. Well, I know that was a very difficult place as well, because Germans were looking right across the valley, and we had to go down a main road, which was the only main road that we were supposed to close to stop the German escape for the Folly Gap. Anyway, the tanks were getting leathered, and my particular carrier, I, with the mortars on, I'd been along the hedgerow, turned off the road, along a hedgerow, set up the mortars, and driven across a field and placed my carrier behind the hedge and asked my carrier driver to stay there until I got back. Well, from then on, I was on foot until I got to platoon headquarters again. Here, I picked up a motorbike, which I always came along on because it was quicker to get liaison from one mortar to the next. But prior to this, we were told about the attack. Our lieutenant, Lieutenant Hawkins, said, right, he says, I intend getting the VC. You know, lads didn't believe him. He says, oh yes, it's true. He says, I shall get the VC here. Said he must be mad, joking. But he wasn't. No, that's the way he's mentioned it before. Well, we didn't believe him. He said, I shall get the VC. Anyway, he went off with the forward troops. Now, I had got to find him, so I jumped on